posting footage of empty bookshelves because of the book ban. And we brought Jasmine Bernie Clark, who runs Equal Ground, that works on educating people across the state and fighting for democracy across the state and voting rights. And what we found in that hearing and through our research is the governor is targeting municipalities, counties, and people across the entire state that disagree with him, and he's subverting democracy, removing them from office, and we can't stand for it. All of these things are connected. We need the Department of Justice to look into the racial hatred, the hatred of Black people, hatred of immigrants going on in the state of Florida.
Democratic Congressmember Maxwell Alejandro Frost, we want to thank you so much for being with us. The youngest member of the U.S. Congress, former National Organizing Director of March for Our Lives, which was formed by survivors of the Parkland shooting in Florida, and Rodney Hearst, civil rights leader from Jacksonville. All the best during this storm. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KBOO every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian.
And eventually, they'll go insane.
You never know what you will find on your radio / interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
They'll go insane. And eventually...
That's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
You can follow KBOO on all your social media platforms. Just look for KBOO on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Get access to our new content and news, as well as special offers and contests. Like and share your favorite community radio station, KBOO.
KBOO.
Yes, the rumors are true. This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. on Tuesday. It's time for Too Much Information with your host, Tracy Simmons. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Radio this morning for Too Much Information today. I'm your host, Tracy Simmons. Away today is Abe Proctor, who is usually with me on these wonderful Tuesday mornings, bringing you information, news you can use. But he's taking a little vacation, so it's just me. And I am definitely not one that likes to be lonely. So call in. I want to hear from you. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And today, you know, I'm back on my soapbox. Sorry, y'all. But there's been a few reports in the last 6 days of things coming out, bubbling about the Portland police, what's going on there, as well as some stories coming out about the corrections department in the state of Oregon, locally here. And so we're going to talk about that because, of course, one of the things that I see as a purpose in my life is to express the need for us to deeply reflect on why we have decided that policing in prisons is the way to safety for our communities. We know it's not true. It has not been met out by the results. The outcomes that we see is actually more pain, destruction, and chaos. And once again, right, we need to start talking about why we have accepted that, why we continue to have the same challenges of our city be overlooked and unaddressed while we continue to spend more money on policing and prisons. So that's the conversation for today. I'll be bringing up some data. And I guess the question for, you listeners is, how do we convince other people who believe that the way to safety is just more, just doing more of the same thing, right? How do we convince those people that this is not the way? Because, of course, those are your voters who continue to vote in people like the current mayor, continue to, you know, suppose that, you know, bringing the business community and the governor together to clean up the city without actual solutions. And, of course, in that conversation is also about policing and making people go to jail for the things that they're doing. So that's the conversation for today, and I hope that you join in. But how do we convince others? Because it's not working. I'm trying my best. But how do we convince other people in our community and in the voting sphere that this has not worked, this is not the way, and eliminate some of the challenges? So just a few days ago, there was a report that Mayor Ted Wheeler wants nearly 100 state troopers to help revive the city. So, of course, we know that Portland Police Bureau has understaffed. There was another report last Saturday, or just Saturday, that the Portland Police Bureau had hired 13 new officers. Of course, right, that comes with pension, that comes with a monetary number. And so, you know, the city is like, well, what do we do now? The mayor's, you know, let's pull resources from the state of Oregon. The Oregon State Police also, you know, has responsibility for supporting rural communities around the state. And as we know, there's always been tension between those rural communities and Portland because we tend to, you know, garner the most resources and support. And we also have, you know, there's other underlying issues there, likely some racism thrown in there, some classism thrown in there. Yeah, we could go on, but I won't. So, you know, the idea that, you know, the city is really struggling. There are some challenges downtown. There's challenges with policing. There's an understaffed police force that we're going to draw on the resources from the rest of the state to help us with this is quite troublesome, right? The idea that those rural communities right now that are, you know, already under-resourced and underserved can't afford to give up any level of safety and security. And, of course, the Oregon State Police also, you know, it's not highly staffed itself. So giving up 100 state troopers is a pretty big shift of resources. So that's the first part. What's interesting also, you know, some data came out from an organization that scrubs public information, and they have put out a report about the Portland Police Bureau under Mayor Wheeler to begin with, and it's not good. It's really pretty interesting. So we've seen, you know, multiple mayors since 2010, Sam Adams from 2010 to 2013, Charlie Hales from 2013 to 2017, and Ted Wheeler from 2017 to the present. And if we look at, you know, just the data, this is data from Portland Cop Watch and Portland Police Bureau, you can see that, you know, under certain mayors, there was a level of violence that was, of course, not good, but, you know, we figured it out. And under the current mayor, it's doubled. So under Mayor Sam Adams, there was 7 non-fatal shootings by the police, 8 fatal shootings, so 15 total shootings. Under Charlie Hales, there were 6 non-fatal shootings by the police, 8 non-fatal, so 14 total. And then under Ted Wheeler, there have been 21 not fatal shootings and 20 fatal shootings, so 41 total shootings by the police since 2017. That is something that, you know, we don't really talk about a lot, but we have to start having this conversation. Because once again, right, if you are going to police a city in a way that says this is what leads to safety, and members of the community continue to die and be shot and maimed by the police at a doubled rate, we've got to talk about it. Like, what is happening here? Why have we accepted this? Why don't we have these conversations? So there's that. And then kind of skipping back to just the policing and prison system altogether, there have been reports coming out about the corrections. And we know that that's part of the, you know, prison industrial complex. Corrections is where we, you know, send people to go and not be rehabilitated and not be supported in their sobriety and not be supported in so many ways. And then, you know, after they do their time, they're just kicked back out onto the street with, you know, very little opportunity and support, but yet they did their time, right? So we're putting scarlet letters on folks and not giving them the resources to get better or be better. But all the time, right, while they're in these facilities, and this came out last week, that interestingly enough, when we looked and found that the Oregon Department of Corrections right now is facing some scrutiny. There is a sergeant within the Oregon Department of Corrections who has been charged with, he's been indicted on sexual abuse and sexual misconduct charges that stem from potentially, right, this is all, of course, indicted, but not been found guilty. But this charge is custodial sexual misconduct, which involves having a sexual intercourse with someone who's in custody. That's someone who's been arrested or incarcerated or on a work crew or release program. Could be probation, parole, or post-prison supervision. And so this person, Levi Gray is the name of the person that's been indicted. So that's there. So we've got people who are in, you know, incarcerated, potentially serving some kind of time for a crime that they've done and been potentially convicted of. So they're doing their time. And the people who we have paid and supported to assist us in holding those people prisoners in captivity of sorts, those people are also committing crimes against those same said people. Yikes, like the level of yikes is so gross. Not only that, but there's been an assessment of Oregon's only women's prison, which is Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, which has found that there's issues of burnt out staff, folks who are just, you know, up to their ears and in trauma and really not functioning at the highest level to support, you know, the work that they need to do. Also a lack of training. And furthermore, complaints that women in custody who reported sexual assault were being retaliated against. So also sexual misconduct happening in these spaces, in this particular space, the one women's correctional facility that we have, and being retaliated for blowing the whistle on things that are happening to them. This is not sustainable, y'all. Like, at some point, we have to have the conversation. Why are we doing this? Who is it benefiting it to anyone? And how do we unpolice ourselves? Like, how do we extract ourselves from this, what feels like a quite interesting downward spiral? Or potentially, just it's always been happening, but the veil is being pulled, right? So we're seeing all of these things. And the interesting thing is that, you know, as the reports are coming out day after day, whose ears are perked up? Who's feeling activated about this? Because for me, to sit back idly and say, oh, this is kind of how it goes, while the whole time there are people who are pooling money together and talking about how to revive downtown and how to address, you know, open use of drugs in public, how to address, you know, this very, very rampant and pronounced houselessness and unsheltered community and the behaviors that come along with that, right? Like, we continue to just try and police our way out of it, and it's absolutely not working. So I really want to hear from y'all. What do we do about this? I'll keep trying to bring up some of the data behind. But let me know, what do you think? how do we convince other Portlanders that this is not the way? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Really interested to hear from y'all. So I want, now going back to the conversation about the mayor and the Oregon State Police, you know, right now the governor is not ruling anything out. Last week we talked about the task force of, you know, the 40 plus members who are trying to have some conversations about how to clean up the city. I'll loop back to that group. But 100 state troopers is a fifth of the statewide total. So make that make sense, right? So one fifth, 20% of the state's resources for state policing are going to come to Portland and leave 80% to the rest of the state. And it's, you know, that doesn't seem like a great idea to begin with. But the idea is that they're going to see fewer overdoses because of their presence. The idea that this transfer of resource in police is going to somehow address the unsheltered population and potentially drug use. Like, give me a break. The war on drugs has never worked. It will not work. It is repetitive and not at all thoughtful. And especially when we have, you know, organizations like Portland Street Response that have been showing great research, you know, great returns on what we've invested in. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. But I got Santiago on the line, and I'm going to let him chat real quick. Santiago, morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good. Good. So basically, the main reasons why the police are not good, number one is qualified immunity, which has protected them for decades from any sort of like meaningful sort of punishment or accountability for what they do in the community. You know, number two is the Supreme Court decision of DeShaney versus Winnebago in 1989, which states that police have no duty to protect the public against harms that were not created by the state. Thirdly, the police were designed to protect private property, period. They were initially slave catchers, and then to retrieve property of the recently emancipated, and to bring them back under heel. And fourth, because under the 13th Amendment, people can be re-enslaved through being convicted of crimes. So a lot, especially here in Oregon, there's a lot of places that benefit from essentially slave labor, which is be like OHSU, Whole Foods, you know. And then on top of that, they use prisoners as people to fight fires. But the messed up part is that they can't get a job as a firefighter after they get released because of their criminal record. So, you know, so I mean, just those reasons alone make them a wholly unaccountable and wholly untrustworthy presence in the community. And I mean, notwithstanding their long time military occupation of black and brown neighborhoods. So, but I think that's the biggest reason why they get away with a lot of it, is because, you know, it happens out of view of the whiter and the whiter society.
Talk about it. Is there a way? Do you see a way to convince those people who have, you know, really put all of their eggs in the policing basket that it's not working? Those are the same people who continue to vote for the people that we're talking about on this program every week. How can we convince those folks?
I mean, honestly, I mean, I don't think it's a, I mean, you can't really, you can't convince people of a belief that is not held from a place of logic. People's belief in policing comes from emotion. Anything, you know, it's like you have copaganda, essentially, from your, you know, from your blue bloods to your, you know, Law and Order, to your, you know, various police shows that have been on throughout the ages. You know, there are ways to get people to appeal emotionally to the plight, so to speak, of the officer. You know, a lot of those shows, they show them as, like, you know, really hard and gritty individuals who have a heart of gold at the end of the day, who just want to do what's right, irrespective of what laws are in place. But that's not, but that is far from the truth and what we see in data. So it's literally just, you have to break through the emotion. You have to break through the appeal of emotion, which is hard. Because it's like a belief in Santa Claus, or a belief in a, you know, I mean, a belief in the Easter Bunny. You know, it's like when you tell a child that, you know, the Easter Bunny isn't real or Santa isn't real, you know, and they have something invested in that, you know, they may lose it. And it's a safety spot. So I mean, to say you're going to convince people out of it is hard, but it's just they have to have some sort of point. I mean, really what it comes down to is we have to change the narrative, because that's what the, I mean, that's what the corporate establishment owns, essentially, irrespective of Republican or Democrat, because Democrats appeal to that emotion too. I mean, we see it under Joe Biden. I mean, he's provided more funding for police in the wake of defund the police than the police were even asking for themselves. So we have to understand that it's a narrative that we have to break through, that we have to create a new narrative. And a lot of that is going to come from, I mean, it's going to come from organizing and to just really, like, understanding that the people that you're speaking against are your neighbors. The people you're speaking against are just like you in a sense, but they're the culture that they live in, the culture that they were brought up in, has watered certain seeds about them. And I mean, it's not something that's going to change overnight, but as you can find ways to show them, to demonstrate to them in a way that is tangible, that, you know, that you can, that they are not to be trusted under any circumstances, that's the only way you're going to get through. There's no silver bullet to getting through, because I mean, it took many decades to form those opinions, and it might take a little bit longer to unform them, but you just have to be patient and just be willing to continue to explain where you can, and just, you know, and just continue to meaningfully organize with those who share the same beliefs as you. You know, I mean, even those who don't, but you, at the end of the day, want to see a better community, and that would have to cause them to want to question things that they have held dear if they're really interested in those things. So,
well, thank you, Santiago. I always appreciate your calls and your expertise and your perspective. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem, Tracy.
Oof, Santiago said it. It's about narrative change. How do we change the narrative? How do we create an understanding for folks that this is not the way? It hasn't worked. It won't work. Putting more resources into policing and prisons doesn't make us safer. And I think, you know, what I heard from Santiago also is, you know, there's this kind of mutually exclusive thing, right? Fear does not exist at the same time as logic, right? And so how do we break through the fear of people around, you know, safety and community safety? We know from data, the safest communities are well-resourced communities. But as long as we are taking money out of the communities and putting it to the resources of policing and prisons, we are extracting resources from our communities, making us less safe. Like, it is a spiral, and we're really on the downward spiral in this. So interesting, you know, I talked a little bit about the 13 new police officers that joined the Bureau last week, making 40 new officers hired this year. And, you know, a couple years ago, right after George Floyd and during the pandemic, or the height of the pandemic. Let me just stop there because the pandemic is still going. Newsflash. But what's interesting, right? There isn't a recruitment problem anymore because during that time, there were people who just didn't want to be the police. So there's an uptick in people who've applied for a job. More than 760 people have applied for a job at Portland Police Bureau, and the almost 48 new officers, which makes about 140 new sworn officers since the hiring push. But yet, here we are still talking about extracting resources from our very needing rural communities and taking away officers from the Oregon State Police. So what is it, right? This idea that more is better. And that is very much part of dominant culture. Folks outside of, the spaces that I occupy would call that white supremacy culture, this idea that doing more of anything is better than doing potentially less. So we've got 140 new sworn officers since the hiring push 2 years ago, and 40 of those who were there before have retired, right? So just this balancing act that continues to not be balanced. And so some of those newer folks haven't even started. Some of the folks who have retired or resigned are out the door, and we're still in this shaky ground, right? So people don't even really understand, what is the challenge? Why are people not liking this job? Well, if you're not paid very well or you're paid moderately, but your job is literally to not really help anybody, but to be there and be a pariah to some communities, I could see why folks wouldn't want to do that job. But once again, 760 people have applied. The training process, still, it takes about 18 months from the hire date to when a person is on the streets alone, so there is quite a learning curve. But currently, and this is as of, what's the date on this? And this is in K2 from August 25th, so Friday, says that 80 vacancies still. So, right, that 100 OSP folks who are ready to hit the streets might support either the 80 vacancies or the almost 100 officers that are still in some phase of a training period where they cannot be on the streets alone. So anyone wondering why there is a lacking police presence in Portland, just know it's because a lot of the folks who are new to the force are in training, and a lot of the folks who were on the force previously have retired and resigned. Once again, right, this is a problem that has a solution. Stop hiring these people and put the money behind Portland Street Response. Stop hiring these people and start putting the money towards infrastructure for mental health and housing. Like, let's do the right thing as a community. But once again, we continue to do the same things over and over again, looking for a different result. Call in 503-231-8187. I'd love to hear your take on how do we change the narrative? How do we shift people's thinking, especially the folks who have always relied on policing as a form of safety and in their mind a conception of how we keep things safe? How do we change those hearts and minds through narrative change? All right, so back to this request of the 100 Oregon State Troopers. So, of course, last Tuesday, Mayor Wheeler floated this at the first meeting of the task force that was convened by Tina Kotek. We talked about that last week, and we talked about its intent on reviving the central city, the downtown area, which has, been, struggling through some crime, livability issues. Of course, during the pandemic, folks left the downtown area for working from home options, and they're really trying to get folks back. Of course, there have been issues of open drug use, which the mayor tried to criminalize by, passing a law just a couple months ago. Nothing's been done there. Of course, we don't have police enough to police people and their drug use. So once again, right, the war on drugs, we're still trying to do that. And there's, of course, you know, some money, of course, in this proposal. And so there's more than $250 million in direct funding requests that are part of this conversation. And once again, right, we have to talk about the money. Who gets the money? Who benefits? Does this money ever see the folks who are struggling the most? And the answer is not so much. We haven't really heard anything about where the money is going, where this $250 million, and right now they're non-specific allocations. So they talk about, you know, expansion of the police, but really haven't gotten to the root causes. So the idea, right, of, you know, kind of having state troopers who have a specific role in the state to come to Portland, and somehow that's like innovative thinking for some folks. I'm sure that Mayor Wheeler believes it's quite innovative. But really thinking about if we have surging addiction and crimes that are related to addiction, why would we invite the police, state troopers, to fix this? Right, it would make a lot more sense that we focus on funding and supporting addiction services, rehabilitation services, giving people free health care and getting them connected to the resources, right, to help them out of these situations. But once again, right, so, you know, the current situation is that even the Oregon State Police, so that they are lacking the workforce themselves. So let's talk about that. The patrol division of the Oregon State Police has roughly 480 sworn officers and dozens of vacant budgeted positions. According to an agency presentation from February, the department had an average of 86 vacant positions over the past 2 years. So even the Oregon State Police is under resourced with, you know, having all of these vacancies, and we're still going to pull those resources to Portland to help us with addiction services. Make it make sense, y'all. Make it make sense. I'm going to go to the callers. Robbie, Robbie's on the line. Morning, Robbie.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to point out something I thought was kind of interesting with the topic is, you know, you're talking about the war on drugs and how it's you know, we're doing the same thing or policing and we're expecting this, you know, we're doing the exact same thing and expecting a different result. But I think, you know, time and time again, it's like, I feel like I've been telling you and Abe that with, you know, voting for the Democrats. I mean, it's like, if you look at the crime bill, a lot of Democrats had all their fingerprints over that. And I just wanted to bring up, you know, it's like, you're kind of expecting the same thing, but then it's like, I don't see any actions. I hear a lot of talk about, you know, oh, we got to change the narrative, we got to change this and that, but I don't really see the action coming out of it, especially with like the Green Party candidate Cornel West, who's polling at 4% right now, and Biden's tanking very badly. I think if there's any action that we could do, it could be trying to rally behind, you know, a party that actually has our cause in mind. KBOO used to be really Green Party friendly, but I feel like lately it's definitely not, at least not until after the talk shows. And then, you know, the old Mull Variety Hour comes on. But, you know, it's like, it's just kind of hypocritical to me because we're sitting here and it's just like, oh, everyone's doing the same thing and expecting different. But then, like, there's been multiple conversations we've had where, you know, you can't support the Green Party because you're told that there's only a two-party system, which isn't a law. It's just something that you're kind of creating, like, some kind of block for yourself. But, you know, I mean, I'm wondering, I'm curious, what actions can you do to break that?
So I don't think we have actions that individuals can take, right? I am not the police commissioner. I do not get to choose, as a you know, private citizen. I only have certain things that I can do, right? Of course, that's convincing others, having conversations that are hard with others. having a platform such as this one right here to try and get folks understanding the mechanisms behind all of this. However, right, if once again, the ideas around policing in prisons have been instilled in our society for hundreds of years.
Right, but Joe Biden's increased the police. Joe Biden's increased.
Why are we talking about Joe Biden? I'm talking about a very specific concern that's happening in our city, a local concern. I'm not really interested in what Joe Biden thinks about that. I'm talking about local politics and how we
influence our neighbors. I guess that's just hypocritical. I mean, if we can't call him out at the top, I don't see how it's going to come down.
We can, but that's not part of the conversation, Robbie, is my point. That's really not what we're talking about right now. But that's like the favorite thing is to focus on Joe Biden.
Even if we did get local, even if we did get like local, you know, thing, let's say we got some grassroots campaign person into a local office, that's not going to create the systemic change that we'll need. I mean, Joanne Artisty had a hard time enough as it was, you know, and I don't see how we can really go further without having a larger, you know, I mean, because I don't really believe we have a democracy. I think it's used for control. I think politics are used for control, this left-right divide. I know this isn't part of the topic, but, you know, it's just interesting to me because you were saying we're doing the same thing over again, but you don't look at what you're doing as the same thing over and over again and supporting Democrats.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even know why you continue to say that, but I'm not going to argue with you. I thank you for your call. Great job. All right. Eric is next online. Eric, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. Just driving to work. So the topic, you know, policing, part of the problem is we are spending more money on policing and on incarceration than we are on education. And if we want to really fix things, we need to start with education. And this is where we need to put the resources. We need to be paying teachers more and making sure that, you know, people have the resources they need in the classroom to teach our children, to so that the children don't see crime as a option. And if we have less crime, we need less police. We need to work on gun responsibility. I think cops are very afraid out on the streets. And if they're working in fear, then they're going to pull their gun more often. So we need to have fewer guns on the street and more responsible gun owners. And then we're going to get to, you know, lose some of the fear factor. To bring up what the gentleman before was talking about, everything needs to start at the beginning. We can't start at the top. So he can talk about Green Party all he wants, but the Green Party needs to get into the state legislation, not go for the presidency, because that's not going to do anything. Everything needs to start at the bottom. You need to start with education, and you need to start in the state legislatures. That's how we fix things. It has to be roots up, not sky down.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I agree, right? This is me trying to start a grassroots movement and just bring awareness to folks that these are all of the problems that are plaguing us, and these are the limited solutions that policing offers, right? Because if you have folks who are really, you know, existing in despair, and part of existence in despair can be, you know, addiction and kind of dissociation through use of you know, substances, chemical substances like drugs, the idea is that you are not supporting these folks by then putting them in prisons, potentially, you know, subjecting them to abuse at the hands of potentially the people who are there to, you know, supposedly keep them safe, right, when we're talking about correctional officers. So if we're really looking holistically at this, we have to begin with a grassroots conversation. Why does the Green Party not? Why is Cornel West polling at 4%? Because there hasn't been a growth of the party at the local level. if we're going to move that forward, it has to be at the local level. It cannot be a person who is also quite old, also quite, questionable with, right, we're already hearing this person has lots of money out there in taxes that are unpaid and child support that's unpaid, and right, we can start poking holes at the person because the party itself has not mobilized at the local level to get party recognition. So now you have a national candidate, and guess what? I don't know how that's going to work out, right, for Cornell or for the Green Party. Not enough has been done at the grassroots to develop this party and develop party recognition, nor a party platform. So I'll just start there. Secondly, right, when we are talking about whole systems, one person does not matter. If the whole system of white supremacy is what's driving our want and need for policing in prisons, we have to address that system. Talking about Joe Biden won't get us there. Joe Biden absolutely has contributed to mass incarceration, mass criminalization. Absolutely, we can say that. But if we just want to focus on one person, that will not stop the system from slow rolling to exactly where we're going, with continued to, you know, extract resources from communities. And I really appreciate Eric talking about the education system, because there's some really interesting stories coming out that we might talk about next week if nothing else, kind of comes up to the surface. But, you know, in talking about the education system and how underfunded we have been in the state of Oregon, how underfunded our education system is here in Portland, the fact that students who are experiencing disability or students who are in need of special education are being grossly underserved. We know that that also fuels the school-to-prison pipeline. So if we're going to talk about it, we have to be really honest. And we cannot just focus on one individual or two individuals. We have to talk about whole systems and how those whole systems are not working, and address the root causes as to why. Oof. Take a breath real quick. So, back on my spiel. So last week we did talk about this, this group that has been created by Governor Tina Kotek to focus on reviving the city. And right after the show, the list of participants came out. And I'm not going to read the whole list. I will invite you to go take a peek at it. But it's an interesting list. So I told y'all, the co-chair is from the CEO of the Standard Insurance Company, one of those people that owns a really large building in downtown. There are some U.S. senators. There are some congressional leaders, some folks from Multnomah County, including Mike Schmidt, who is our district attorney and the chair of Multnomah County, which is Jessica Vega Peterson. Interesting enough, there's a huge slanderous billboard downtown slandering both of those two for, blaming all of the city's issues on these two people who have been in office for probably less than 3 years collectively. Neither here nor there. That's what we do. Prosper Portland's in the building, right? So one of the main contributors to what we call, city revitalization. I say that in air quotes because usually just that's code for gentrification, moving people, displacing people, hiking up the rents, hiking up the cost so that it is unaffordable and unsustainable for people who are lower to no income. So Prosper Portland's in the building, Legacy Health, Schwabe, Tillamook Creamery Association, U.S. Bank, the Portland Art Museum. I mean, none of these organizations, and I love the Portland Art Museum, so don't get me on that. But none of these organizations have a stake in actually helping humans, right? So there's always going to be a financial motive here. And what I'm seeing in this very long list is I can name, like, on one hand, the organizations that I would see as, the people who would absolutely be here. So Central City Concern is on that list. The Urban League is on that list. Who else? I mean, it's really interesting. Like, that there are not a lot of organizations that are very much central to human development and growth. The Native American Youth and Family Services is there, so that's a good thing. But it's a very limited group of people who actually serve humans on this list. Travel Portland, right? So we're talking about travel organizations. Mother's Bistro, right? Large corporations that have for a long time existed in the city, and through their capitalistic interest want to clean up the city, but not because they care about the actual humans. So once again, right, we're trying to throw this chunk of money and bring together organizations who have a financial interest, but not focus on the human interests that are at stake when we're talking about cleaning up our city. It is, oh, my goodness. Yeah. Sonia, the engineer, says, more keep them in line than keep them safe. Yeah, the idea that let's keep our money coming by making sure we clean up the city, and clean up is a euphemism for remove the people that we don't like, remove the people we don't want to see. And the question is, then where do those people go, right? If we put them in police situations and put them in prisons, it does not solve the problem. It actually exacerbates the problem because of the harm and trauma that people experience in that system itself. So, you know, we continue to circle the drain. Interesting enough, talking more about money, so there was some proposals, you know, $250 million in direct funding requests from the state, and more ideas that suggest those non-specific allocations. So you're asking for money and you're not saying where it's going, which is very, very challenging. Expansion efforts. To expand the police and expand the police's ability to, you know, arrest people for, say, doing drugs in public, right? All of that has been underway. But, you know, a branch office in downtown for Oregon State Police, just imagine. And the idea that having an office downtown would actually do something is pretty ridiculous. But the idea that, you know, this kind of collaboration between Oregon State Police and the Portland Police Bureau would somehow create some kind of checks and balances, because even in this report, there has been noted that, you know, this increase in fatal and non-fatal shootings by the police of our community members, right? So the idea there is, you know, if the Oregon State Police was present, it would potentially reduce the amount of police violence against community members. Laughable. I mean, if y'all are hearing me right now, it makes no sense. So once again, there's that, you know, 46-person business-heavy roster of this group, and the idea that all of these folks are going to get together and come up with a way forward that has anything to do with supporting our most vulnerable, our most under-resourced community members is laughable at best. And this is what I'm talking about. At the local level, we need to be standing up and saying, hey, we have some things that are in place that are underfunded. Portland Street Response, to name at least one of them. Why wouldn't we transfer funds to expand that program instead of trying to police our way out of the situation we're currently in? This is local politics I'm talking about. I do not really care too much about Joe Biden in this conversation. I do not really care about Joe Biden, period. I just want to confirm that for anyone who's ever questioned that. Right? Our our binary two-party system does not work. I will continue to say that. Right? Will continue to say that. I don't know what else some folks want from me. But I'm talking about local politics. I'm talking about how we stand up as Portlanders and say, enough. If we're spending money on the things that matter, let's spend it on the people we are trying to help, the challenges and the root causes that we're trying to solve for. So, you know, take from that what you will. We've got about 10 minutes left. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Please, I want to hear from folks. How do we change the narrative? How do we get people mobilized in the city at the local level to really build some capacity for change? I've got Francis on the line. Francis, good morning. Francis, are you there?
Me. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yeah, I hear you. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, I don't know where to begin. For me, prisons are barbaric and illogical and unnecessary, but that's me. And I know there are some prison abolition organizations. I think Portland has one now called Critical Resistance. So there are people you can join with now to deal with the subject of policing and imprisonment. You know, I was just noticing when they were dealing with all of those defendants in that racketeering thing in Georgia, they kept commenting on how terrible that jailhouse is and how awful the conditions are. I mean, but no one questioned why. Why is it so terrible there? It is ironic to me that the only individual of all those defendants that remains in custody is the only black person among them. And they talked about that place like it was just terrible. But how in this 2023 does an institution like that exist? And why is it allowed to continue to exist is my question. But I just wanted to say that there are abolitionist movements that people can get involved in. And apparently there's one grassroots one now here right in Portland to address this. And their whole focus is on doing away with prison and addressing the basic needs that people have, which include freedom. And I agree with you totally on what you've been saying about how we need to change the perspective, you know, kind of step out the box and look at what really would work and what helps people, genuinely helps people. And you did mention gentrification a minute ago, and I just wanted to say that a lot of times when people speak of gentrification, they talk about, you know, raising the cost of the property and development and all this, but they always forget the part that came first. I know that came first in gentrifying my northeast neighborhood, which I don't live anymore, was the criminalization of the community first. And that was so evident to me. I lived in northeast Portland, and it was difficult to get anyone to recognize that because everyone was so afraid of crime. But I believe that it was a concerted effort, probably with a lot of those people that you have mentioned that are on that committee, to take the property, develop the property. That's what it's always about, the money. And until we are honest with ourselves about what's going on, it will continue. But anyway, you keep up the good work, and thank you so much for your show.
Thank you so much, Francis.
Bye.
Well, here we are, right? You know, it's 8:53 on a Tuesday morning. We've been talking about this in various shades for a long time, and I'm definitely going to look out for that organization, Critical Resistance. Check it out, because I feel like there has to be some momentum that gets built around this. The the way we see distractions, even talking about the former guy and other distractions that are, taking up our time and creating the optics that there's something else that's more important to focus on. As long as those distractions are engaged with and, take our thinking and focus away from actually solving for the issues of our city, the apathy will take over us. And this is what I'm always trying to push against, this idea that, someone else will fix it, right? As long as we don't have to see it, we can go to our suburbs, we can go to the parts of the city that feel comfortable for us, that we don't have to see the level of poverty and despair. And I will continue to say, we can't look away. Don't look away. The people who need most of our help and most resources, if we were to provide them with what they need, our city would be better. Our city would be healing. And so it's just a mechanism for us to be in a comfortable bubble, and that's very normal. That's human behavior. But please don't do it, and stop. And if you are a person who is feeding the narrative that it's the people, not the systems, I need to check in with you on that as well. Because I'm in spaces a lot and I'm hearing people. And when I hear their complaints, they are not complaining that there is a proposal for $250 million to support capitalistic interests and fund more police to solve this problem. Like, we need to talk about the systems that have allowed this to happen, have allowed some places in our downtown to be uninhabitable, to feel unsafe. We have to talk about the systems, not the people. We have demonized and criminalized the people and not the people who make the policies who have allowed this to happen. And we need to shift that narrative too. And so, it's interesting. We're seeing this weather change really swiftly. And the only thing I'm glad about that is that it provides relief for unsheltered people. It provides some kind of cover for climate change that we're facing all over the rest of the country. We've been spared pretty well here in Portland. But if nothing more, right, we need to be having real conversations with each other, with the people we have community with the people who might have different ideas than we do, and using our influence to continue trying to shift this narrative. What we're doing hasn't worked, hasn't helped. It's getting worse. Doing more continues to, constrain our resources for doing better. And there are ways to get more information and become more aware of our own personal responsibility to protect ourselves and to support our other community members. Community doesn't happen just by one person. It really does take a mobilized effort on the part of many. And so I'm hoping you will, in your awakening, become more active and show up, start questioning those people at the policymaking table, questioning why the people at the policymaking table support other people. Because, right, we'll have an opportunity, I continue to say, if you're interested in being part of the expanded commission, please consider, run for something. Get politically active. If you have the bandwidth, if you have the capability, if you have no idea what you're doing, get a mentor. There's information on the City of Portland website about running for that commission. I want to see that commission reflect our community and the diversity that we have that is beautiful, and the diversity of thought and political ideology, so that we can really move past this very much escalator we are on, where we just have this one solution for all of the problems and it's never worked. So with that, I will get ready to sign off and say thank you so much for all of our callers today. Appreciate what you bring to the show. Appreciate your thoughts and your perspectives. Once again, it's kind of cold, and so hopefully you're taking care of yourself, but the weather will likely shift back, and it'll be hot again, so keep that in mind. If you have the ability to reach out, to take care of somebody, to check on somebody, please do so. Our community needs it and thrives on it, and yeah, you're a big part of that, so thank you. It is also an opportunity to share some of your resources with KBOO so we can continue providing you some amazing programming and thoughtful reflections on how to improve our community. So please do that. Thank you, and we'll see you back next Tuesday. Take care. Over me.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a full-time development director. This position leads all fundraising campaigns in alignment with KBOO's mission, goals, and policies. The development director works closely with management and staff to identify funding priorities and create major donor campaigns, capital campaigns, and grant writing. More info can be found at kboo.fm/hiring. We will begin reviewing applications on August 7th, and the position will remain open until filled. KBOO is an equal opportunity employer.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation in.